the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Let's actually, in the week trending with Alison Healy and Dave Hanratty, start with British politics, because a lot of people noticed during the week, because a lot of it went around on social media in particular, Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, crying. Tell us a little bit about this.
So this happened during Prime Minister's questions this week, and notably she was crying not for 1 or 2 minutes, but she cried throughout the duration, which was about half an hour. People facing her in the galley could see the tears streaming down her face. Clips on social media that started to circulate afterwards, it was very clear that this was a woman who was very upset.
And why was she? For those who are not familiar with the story, what prompted this crying?
So there are many questions about that. Keir Starmer didn't seem to notice it at the time. He was oblivious, you know, taking questions and answering them. It was only afterwards, when somebody pointed it out to him that she had been crying, that aides were seen to kind of flock around her and to ask her, you know, what was going on. And lots of statements came out saying, oh, it was a personal matter. And then when you delved into it, you could find kind of discover that she had kind of rowed before she went out. And the details haven't been made public. He has since not said that he would speak on why she was upset, but that the matter had been resolved and that she was fine. And later on that day, she did come out herself and put on a brave face. But you'd kind of wonder what had happened so badly that she couldn't... This is a woman who has control over herself and her emotions and couldn't get control over those emotions during a very highly visible part of the job.
Okay, what's your take on this, Dave? What happened here?
I mean, it's a fact of life. We're all human. You are entitled to have a moment in your day, whether it is your working day or not, to break down. Now, we don't know the particulars here because, like we were saying there, the official line is one thing, and then there's reports behind the scenes of another thing, and is it connected to the overall government policies that are being enacted and so on and so forth. So it's her business, really, but of course she is a public figure and it was visible. It is interesting that Keir Starmer didn't see it, but it maybe just doesn't have peripheral vision in terms of how they're actually seated in the gallery. But it has sparked a bit of a debate about should you be allowed cry at work, etc., etc. And I mean, like,
because is it seen by people as a sign
of weakness? Yeah, and I think that's also kind of job context specific as well. I mean, you know, Tom Hanks one said there's no crying in baseball, and I assume in sports you're probably still not allowed to show emotion unless, say, you've won a major tournament.
I'll say the most famous crying in sport was Gaza in 1990. Remember in the World Cup semi-final, you're too young.
No, I recall it.
Okay, England against West Germany, wasn't it? And when he got booked and realised that if England got through to the final, he couldn't play.
Yeah.
And Gary Lineker signalled to the sideline, get him off.
Yeah, points at him, kind of, but he gave him the gesture of, like, look after him type thing, which was nice. I love seeing in sport, for example, I love seeing emotions. I love seeing emotions in award speech. I think it's a beautiful thing. In work, look, I mean, you shouldn't be chastised if you have a moment. But what if you're dealing with the bereavement or something? I've had that happen to me. I've been in work and I cut a couple of tears streamed down my face in the wake of my father's passing. And I felt okay about that because it was like, well, look, this is the situation I'm in right now. I'll take a moment, I'll compose myself, I'll move on with my day.
I think so many people tapped into this story this week because so many people cry at work. Just because you don't see somebody crying at their desk doesn't mean they're not in the loo bawling their eyes out. Personal matters don't stop because you get in the lift and clock in, you know, and it can be even work-related. There can be awful working environments to be a part of, and it's very difficult to sit there throughout the day and manage your emotions as well as difficult people and a high-pressured role and a job. And I think that it's interesting that the two examples you two brought up were men in sport, where this was a woman in politics.
I've actually got another one, because another day I just thought of it and a listener has reminded me of a famous one. Munster and Ireland rugby player John Hayes, before the Ireland game, I think he was against England in Croke Park 2007, bawling his eyes out crying because of the emotion of the occasion.
So there you go, you're saying that these men are crying from the passion of it all, but when a woman cries at work, she's emotional. And I'm not trying to belabor the point.
But I wonder, Alison, if a man cried in the Dáil, would there be any sympathy towards them?
Yeah, well,
you think so?
Well, I don't know if there's sympathy here. I think there are questions as to, it's such a huge reaction to have in a public space. And so often we're told that, you know, politicians are robots and they don't feel and they've thick skin and, you know.
I do remember a minister falling asleep in the Dáil when it was down in the convention centre during COVID and getting absolutely roasted for it.
But they're human beings. then they're going to have human emotions and human reactions, and I think it's a good thing.
It was the prolonged nature of this in the Rachel Reeves case.
Yes.
You can see that she was visibly in distress for quite some period of time and nobody intervened. I mean, you can stop what's going on and maybe bring some attention to it. You know, even seeing conservative MPs weighing in after the fact and saying things like, it was horrible to look at. Well, then you should have done something.
But isn't that very stiff upper lip? Like,
of course, we'll just
carry on.
And this will be used against her because she's a woman, and it will be used against her.
I agree.
Well, that's a very British thing, isn't it? The stiff upper lip, that you never display emotion.
Keep calm and carry on.
She'll obviously stop quite soon.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. No, all these things do come into play. Gender is a part of it as well. But across the board, generations have moved on, and it shouldn't be seen as a sign of weakness. But in some industries,
have we moved on?
No, we as a society, by and large, to some degree, things are quote unquote more acceptable. But different industries will have different ways of doing things, and there will be lots of people out there who are in situations where they feel that they are not able to do. They're not allowed to show any weakness whatsoever, including emotion. And as you correctly say, it's fine. And I do enjoy when a sports person shows that level of passion. But yes, as you kind of allude to, that's acceptable. This isn't.
Well, actually, this listener has just reminded me that my predecessor as host of this program, and this is going back well over 20 years ago, Eamon Dunphy, on a number of occasions, cried in public, I think on television appearances, when he was very upset at what he perceived and regarded as injustices against various people.
But you see, isn't that not wonderful? Because if that is becoming more of the norm, you know, our feelings are valid, and we should be allowed to feel all of our feelings all of the time. And I'd love to touch on this. People cry for a variety of reasons. It's not just sadness. People can cry from frustration, from not being heard, from not being allowed to have a feeling.
There's from being overworked. You can be in a state of euphoria and all
frustration,
of a sudden. Yeah.
Like, there's many reasons why people cry. And if we're only allowed to be 100% happy all the time, hashtag Instagram life, and suppress everything going on, where does it come out then? When you go home, anxiety, depression? Like, have a good old blubber. It's fine. Create people you can count on and work. And seeing people in high profile positions being emotional like this is a good thing.
Well, actually, another listener says Enda Kenny famously cried when making an apology for the Magdalene laundries.
Yeah.
He was praised for showing his emotions.
Yeah. It's 2025.
Another one says Barack Obama cried when speaking about the shootings at Sandy Hook. And of course, the shootings at Sandy Hook, where you have some of the most appalling people in American public life at present trying to pretend that those never actually happened.
Yeah.
When all of those children were killed. That's a very, very good example.
Again, men, you know, and I think, are you discussing that because they're isolated examples where you can get behind them, but there's more work to be done around women being tearful? And I think that there is. But I think tearfulness in general is a very good thing.
It's difficult to be confronted by somebody crying, especially if it is like a big reaction, because you don't know what to say or what to do.
Love when someone cries.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to comfort the person, but you don't want to distress it further. And there is a social awkwardness that comes there, I think, across the board. But we do, I think, need to get better at recognising these things as just being completely human.
Here, this one. This is a tough comment. In a work environment like that, and the House of Commons is a work environment, if she needed to cry that much, she should have left the room. She's an adult. That she should have moved out of the way.
Well, apparently and allegedly, she had an argument right before the question started and didn't have time to remove herself. It had happened just as the green light went on. So I don't know if she could have done that. I think she was a deer in headlights and she froze and she was just trying to do her job and was caught in a very difficult situation and she had an emotional reaction.
Possibly fear that maybe doing so would draw more attention to it. Maybe she didn't anticipate the level of attention that was already
they were under fire anyway, you know.
Somebody else says Winston Churchill was known for crying a lot and he's regarded by a lot of the British as the most stiff of all stiff upper lips, but he actually was a man who was known to crying.
What about
sign of weakness is a load of crap, says listener. Letting emotions flow is what brings the body back to normal. In my opinion, someone that lets it out is more fit to do the job than somebody who still has bottled it all up.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Everything is contextual. I remember years ago there was a cricketer who passed away from a horrible accident during a game, and his friend and captain had to do a press conference about it, and I remember he was talking about him and he kind of swallowed and took a moment and you could hear him under the microphone just saying, do your job, like composing himself in the moment, and he got a lot of respect for that because he felt like, I have to get through this for that person. I don't want to make it about me. It's difficult. Like there are so many instances when someone is crying, and as you correctly point out, there's a myriad of reasons why it could be. be. And I think it's great that we're having this discussion, and I'm sure lots of listeners are relating to
it. Here's another one. Now, this is a little bit maybe controversial as well. Sometimes crying can be strategic. I worked with a girl who would bawl her eyes out in the toilet every time anyone disagreed with her in the office. She would use the toilet immediately beside the HR manager's office, and it was designed to get her colleagues in trouble.
Yeah, so that's weaponized crying, and weaponized anything isn't okay. But like, they're extremes. You know, you're talking about people showing vulnerability and connecting with people through that. And I just genuinely think we need to be doing more of it, especially in the workplace.
A listener says, I'm a 62-year-old Manchester United fan, and I cried when I heard the news of the death of Diogo Jota, the Liverpool footballer. And actually, I actually have to say, the tributes to the posts that I read, Matt, Caoimhín Kelleher's and Andy Robertson's posts were absolutely beautiful, heartfelt. And actually, they were the things that would bring a tear to your eye, just reading just the emotions of two men who had lost their friend whose wedding they'd been at less than 2 weeks ago.
I went into work yesterday when that story had just broken, the Irish Independent, and one of my colleagues who's a Liverpool fan, he was ashen-faced. And then you have to write a story about it. And I know that he found it difficult to do.
Well, in today's world, is there not a lot to cry about as well, particularly? You know, it's not sunshine, lollipops and rainbows all the time, and we are not robots. So to come in and expect us to log on and smile and pretend it's fine, especially in certain workplace environments where you can't avoid what's going on, even in any workplace, like anybody anywhere, you can't turn your emotions off. And we're told all the time we shouldn't.
We're overwhelmed.
But then when somebody cries, we're pointing their finger, oh my God, they're crying.
Yeah.
It's just double standards.
Over the week, people have been talking about Glastonbury being on television and all of the controversies about what was shown and what wasn't shown. And there are people saying that, well, why not have the electric picnic on television? Alison?
Why not? Indeed. They used to, and it stopped in 2017. RTE used to televise Electric Picnic. Not all of it live, but a similar way that Glastonbury did. It's a no-brainer. And plus, you have the added fact of that Ireland's so small that 9 out of 10 times you're going to look into the crowd and see a big head and someone that you know. So there's people who want to look. There's people who can't go. It's sold out every year. There's an accessibility factor. There's an entertainment factor. And in a world where RTE are begging for viewers, you know, people are live streaming gigs now and getting millions of views. So they know it will be successful, and yet they're still choosing not to do it.
They're also begging for money, though. And I think if a massive outlay was to go on this, a lot of people would be upset considering all the other areas they need to be looked at. I agree in principle, it would be nice to have proper television coverage of the picnic. And I do mean proper. I think what we had before wasn't up to scratch at all. But it's not like for like. It's not like Glastonbury is a small army in terms of an operation, and of course, granted, much bigger place in the world, but you're talking like 20 something million people tune in for that and to watch the BBC highlights. There's 90 hours of iPlayer sets going on over the weekend. It really does take a village in that regard, and it's famous coverage. They're famed for their coverage and have been for many, many times, and it is top notch. I watched a lot of it last weekend, and yet again, BBC kind of knocked it out of the park for the most part. Obviously, we had all the controversy. That's for another day. I just don't know. I just think that what we got before in terms of coverage on RT was quite low rent, and they need to kind of reevaluate the whole thing, and I don't think that they can do it on a shoestring budget, which is also the problem.
But I don't think you compare Glastonbury to Electric Picnic. I just don't think you compare UK audiences to Irish audiences at all. I think there's a product demand there, and they can meet that demand, and at a time where they're looking to do that, they're choosing not to.
But what about Dave's point, though? If they don't do it as well as the BBC do it, then people start criticising RTÉ for doing the cheap provincial option.
Well, okay, so there's a formula to this. You know, you just need to have really good cameras, and you need to have line of sight as to what you can't miss, and you need to have good market research into what people at home will likely want, and then serve them a bit of spice. It's programming. And they are the state broadcaster. So they should be looking at the programming options they have and the incredible staff that they have who can go down and make something of this. They're probably, you know, going to eat their own dinner. And maybe they didn't anticipate with the kneecap activity that happened at Glastonbury. They didn't anticipate that the appetite would be there for it this year, and they've ideas to do it next year. But make the point.
What I thought was interesting was that the official line coming out of RT was that this is an editorial decision. So they're not saying it's a financial issue. They're saying it's an editorial thing, which makes me think that someone either doesn't want to do it or doesn't know how to do it. So what I will say is, if they do bring it back, take some time map it out, get it right, and produce incredible television that is given a good slot on TV as well, isn't just buried after midnight or whatever, because Picnic is massive, it is a juggernaut. I understand, yes, of course, Glastonbury, much bigger, but like, Picnic is Ireland's Glastonbury, essentially.
Look at the Taylor Swift tour, look at Oasis tonight in Cardiff. People are having watch parties, and they're watching the worst quality streams I've ever seen on TikTok. Honestly, Matt, it'd be like you going to the Viva and throwing your phone up in the air. Like, it's not good. And people are willing and able and happy to spend 2 or 3 hours of their time doing that.
They're doing football-style build-up on one of the channels, I think it's BBC possibly, for the Oasis gig.
Yeah.
Like the FA Cup final, which is for a gig. So you can be inventive with these things. It might not work, but take the opportunity, take the shot. But like I say with RTE, just like really finesse it, get it right, less people running around in the back areas talking to musicians. Like, I don't care about
that. Oh, 100%.
Give me great coverage and in studio stuff. The BBC is the template. Copy their homework.
Okay, let's talk about other things. What's the Nina service?
Oh God! it's a badly named kind of service that it's going to look after late night revelers who may need it, right? So it's Nina, like it does exactly what it says on the tin. There'll be a medic on board. There'll be an officer, a security officer. There'll be plenty to keep people busy, and it's going to operate as a pilot scheme on Camden Street for 6 weeks. And if there is success, then probably roll it out across cities around Ireland. But it just feels a bit naff. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it could probably start earlier in the night with the Dublin night scene the way it is. The 3 o'clock in the morning thing on Camden Street, I'm not sure how valid that is when it's actually nearer 10 or 11 o'clock that people need to be looked at.
There's still loads of people out on Camden Street after 12 o'clock after midnight.
No, there are, but there's plenty before then. You know, they're starting earlier, and Camden Street's just one small, tiny area where people are, you know, having a good time. And this service is for people who might have had too much of a good time. And, you know,
Something goes horribly wrong.
Actually, I thought it was in Something Goes Horribly Wrong. And in their missive, they said, you know, if you lose your keys or your mates. So you're going to call a Nina if you lose your keys.
That could be horribly wrong. How am I going to get it in my house?
A little knock. You'll do what generations did before you, and you sleep on the doorstep.
Those days are over. This is the intention is pure. Ray O'Donoghue, the nighttime advisor, economy advisor, has said that yes, the name is lighthearted, but the mission is very serious. It's about keeping people safe. I'm sorry, the name is terrible. I hate the name. I hate to be that guy, but I think it's naff. It smacks of a very annoying creative agency coming up with something kitsch and trying to be cute and trying to be clever, which I don't like. And it does feel like an idea from 10, 15 years ago. As well, a little bit.
Okay, this listener says, I'm from the north. We have a booze cruise, which if you're too drunk, a paramedic can look at you and decide you need to be brought home. It's a bus which ensures people, especially women, get home safely. It's an excellent idea.
That's a great idea, you know, because it's getting you home. This is kind of getting you looked at. And I'm not sure it's being messaged, like to Dave's point, it's not being messaged the right way. They have a communication.
It sounds like the medic tent at a festival.
Well, the other one says they have it in Liverpool and it works brilliantly, keeping people out of hospital.
Well, keeping people out of hospital is one, but then it also tells you it'll help you find your keys. So it's one or the other.
And your mates. How's it going to do that? Your phone's off. You don't know my mate's name.
Slip a tile into their pocket.
I think we need
when
to.
You're in the pub with them.
Oh, what was it? Oh, a tile. Sorry. Okay.
You need to go undercover here and just see exactly how this thing works, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, other stories. I'm fascinated by one from the United States, Dave, which came up in The Athletic today. And a former world champion boxer, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., has been detained by ICE, Immigration Control, but in extraordinary circumstances, given that he wasn't exactly hiding from public view, was he?
No, this is at the end to a tough week for him, right? Because he lost a boxing match to Jake Paul, the influencer-turned-boxer, and yet another one of these, here's a guy past his prime, for Jake Paul to beat up on and win a unanimous judging decision. Great. Like, when will this end? When will the charade stop? But people tune in. And yeah, shortly afterwards, he was taken into custody by ICE. And they've called him an illegal alien. They've accused him of ties to the notorious Sinaloa cartel, said that he's involved in trafficking firearms, ammunition and explosives. He's been described as an egregious public safety threat, all of which it seems to be news to his associates, who former coaches and everything, have said, like, we've never known of any ties to any kind of criminal organizations. This seems completely, like, he's a celebrity, like where he comes from. Like,
and meanwhile, earlier this year, for Patrick's Day in the White House, we had an Irishman, who I think there's been talk about him fighting Jake Paul as well, who had already been found criminally liable in a civil trial of rape, and he was brought in as a guest of honour representing Ireland. I mean, what's the difference between a Mexican and an Irish man, I wonder?
I think there's an obvious difference. Yeah, our presidential hopeful. Look, Trump has been not coy about nailing his colours to the mast in many respects, and we know that he loves Conor McGregor despite everything. We know that he loves the UFC. I wrote an article for the Irish Independent about MAGA and the UFC and the kind of encroaching bill that's been happening a few months ago, and this update makes me want to write a new article about it because it's not going away. They don't care that they're hypocrites, by the way. Like, this is the most open targeting of people who they don't like for the obvious reasons that they're doing. The state of America right now, if you're a minority, sorry.
But the quote from the Department of Homeland Security just absolutely backs up what you're saying there. They say that under President Trump, no one is above the law, including world famous athletes, except when they want to look the other way, I suppose.
Yeah. Or invite them as a special guest, or have the likes of Tucker Carlson coming in, doing interviews with them in Dublin as if they're all knowledgeable spokespeople for what's going on in this country.
It's the lack of them not caring that people can see straight through it is chilling.
Well, let's talk about somebody who deserves to be celebrated and spoken about as a great Irishman, and that's Brother Kevin Crowley.
Oh, I know. He passed away this week. He is a remarkable man and needs to have his own half-hour slot. Kind of just giving him credit for all of the work he did over his long years serving the Captain Day Centre, which is a centre here in Dublin for people experiencing homelessness. He took that from 60 meals a day to 800 meals. He provided food packages for people who needed them at Christmas time. He was always calm, cool, collected, caring. When the Pope came to visit, he went to visit the centre and met Brother Kevin. He had this kind of, I don't know how you describe him, just this kind of accessibility about him, and he was very true to what he believed to be right and the right approach to this, and he never swayed. Now, he lived to a lovely old age of 90 and has been celebrated, rightfully so, this week, because there's not a lot of Brother Kevins left, Matt.
Yeah, that's the thing. It really does kind of speak to a different time in Irish society that we kind of need a lot more of. The funeral takes place tomorrow. I'd imagine it's going to be extremely well attended. Tributes from everyone you would expect, but also leading them, of course, was President Michael D. Higgins. And yeah, like a genuine, someone who you wish would lived another 10 years to continue the work that he was doing and touch the people, reach the people and help the people that he had done to date. But yeah, like as you say, we need more of
53 years.
Yeah, what a legacy he's left behind. And that's the question, who steps in now and where does that go? As one small service in this country that he ran 24/7, 365.
Yeah, I think others have been helping him in recent years, and he was in a nursing home and stuff. So I suspect that the tradition, the service will be continued.
Hopefully.
Although, isn't it terrible that it's required?
Yeah, and we do work throughout the year here at JFM with Focus Ireland, for example, working with people who are experiencing homelessness and doing fundraising. And the more you find out about it, the more infuriating it is, because the numbers keep getting bigger, the money given keeps getting bigger, and the cost of living keeps getting worse. And we're locked into this cycle, which we'd need a whole other half an hour to get into properly. But I think, in a time where we've just lost Brother Kevin, it's a time when we need people like him the most.
A listener says, Brother Kevin was living his Christianity every day, no judgment, helping others, true service. I think we leave it there. I think that's a lovely note to finish on, rather than going into anything else. Alison Healy and Dave Hanratty, thank you both very much for being with us here on The Last Word.
The Last Word. With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.